Good evening. So when I first heard that there were sign-up sheets for the Bob Brown meetings, I did a double take because I know Bob's a popular guy, but I didn't realize that we had to sign up to come to the meetings. So, but it's a different kind of sign-up sheet, I guess.
Invitation only.
Tonight, we're going to continue our series on understanding the teachings of Christ. And we have, the last couple of times, looked at two of his three statements that are certainly pretty radical statements in terms of qualifications for being a disciple. He said, and they're all contained in one place in Luke chapter 14, and then other places in the three parallel Gospels. And he said, you have to hate your relatives. He said, you have to forsake all. And tonight we're going to look at the one where he said in Luke 14, 27, whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Now remember that we don't find instructions in Acts or the epistles directed to the church that we are to be disciples. That concept is contained within the Gospels and seems to be directed at those who sought to follow him during his earthly ministry. But we've seen in looking at some of those passages, there certainly are parallel truths that carry over and are amplified in the epistles that definitely relate to us. And tonight, this particular statement has maybe more passages that directly apply it to us than the other two do. So listen up. So we're going to look at this particular one, and just to review for the sake of establishing the context, what was happening in this passage in Luke 14, Christ had been invited to a meal. And he was sharing that meal, and at least some of the folks that were there were the Pharisees and the scribes, along with his disciples. And it seems like, from the context, or from what's written, the Pharisees and the scribes were doing the majority of the talking. And so you could say there was a conversation going on, or you might even call it more of a debate between the Pharisees and Christ, and we always know how that tended to end up. But we see that here. And within that context, Christ answers two or three things, and he really critiques what was happening there at that meal. And we talked about that a little bit in the last message. And then when it was over, it says, he got up and left, and multitudes followed him. And that was a common occurrence. When Christ would perform miracles, or when he would demonstrate his wisdom and his superiority in discussions with the Pharisees and the religious leaders, very frequently crowds would follow him. And so it's in that context that he made these three statements of the qualifications of being a disciple. It wasn't for everybody. Now, elsewhere we find this same concept about bearing your cross, coming after him. We find it repeated in Mark 8 and in Matthew 16 and also in Luke 9. And in Luke 9, it follows the feeding of the 5,000. And if you remember that story, when he had fed the 5,000, John tells us in John 6, I believe it is, that the multitudes came and would take him by force to make him their king. Now, he had just prior to that sent his disciples away as if to get them out of the influence of the mob, which was being emotionally driven, not by reality or truth, but by the fact that they had been fed, and he said so much. And so it's in that context, after that had happened, and after he had sent the multitudes away and rejoined his disciples, that this concept is repeated again in Luke 9:23, I think it is, if I wrote it down right. And he says this, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. Now, it's interesting to note that just prior to this, apparently, you know, he had sent his disciples out to do some miraculous works. And they had come back and they were really pumped because they had seen people healed in their command. And they had seen demons cast out. And they were pumped only to find out that John the Baptist had just been beheaded. Now, the mood just changed, didn't it? The cost just went up. Imagine if we gathered here on Sunday morning. Who's speaking Sunday morning? I hadn't looked at the schedule. Huh? Bob Brown. Okay, well. I didn't sign up to come. That's right. So let's just imagine that you know, Bob is up there speaking, and all of a sudden, some officials come storming in and grab him and arrest him on the spot and carry him out. How many would show up next Sunday? Have you ever thought of that? But that's what was going on here, except they didn't just carry him out. He was beheaded. So the cost just got really vividly illustrated to the disciples about what this might mean. And it's in that context that he says these words, "If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me." So what exactly was he saying? He said deny himself. And as I said, this particular concept, I think we'll find, is repeated in the epistles. Not in so many words, but in principle. So let's just consider this first component of denying himself. What did he mean? The Greek word here is that's translated deny is Strong's number G533. Now, I'm not going to attempt to pronounce it. Now, I'm going to do a little aside here for a moment. Okay? What in the world is Strong's number G533? For those of you who are students, you already know this, so you can just follow along. For those of you who are maybe just starting to study the Bible for yourself, this is a Strong's Concordance. It is edited by James Strong, a language expert. And it has every word in the Bible listed, and it tells you where that word is found, the English word. And if you look up the word deny, then you'll find a bunch of listings. Now, the ones in the Old Testament, we're not considering. The ones in the New Testament, we're going to look at the word. And the word, in this case, is 533. So, if you went here and you found deny, you would find this passage and you would find 533. Then you look in the back and you find two sections, a Hebrew section and a Greek section. Now, the New Testament was written in what? Greek. Okay. So don't look up 533 in the Hebrew or you're going to really be confused. But you want to look it up in the Greek. And in the Greek, it will tell you what I'm going to tell you. So the reason I said this is a fundamental tool for you to understand the Bible. The Bible was not written in English. And so there are words in the original that cannot be exactly translated into English. And so it's helpful when you're studying a passage to look back and see what at least some of the main words mean from a original use standpoint. And that's kind of what we're doing here. So this word deny, it's used, I think, 11 times in the New Testament. It also is only used in the Gospels, but you don't get off easy tonight. There's another word that is a slightly weaker version of this word. It's number 720, and it's used all through the epistles. Okay, so this concept of denying is not isolated to the Gospels. But this word, the strongest of the two, means to utterly deny. To disown, to abstain. So when you see this word, somebody is totally separating themselves from whatever it is that they're seeking to deny. Now, of those 11 or so times, I believe if I counted right, 9 of them are associated with Peter's denial of the Lord. So we'll think about that in a minute. Sunday, I got really kind of worried because Ray went to Philippians 2. And when you think of self-denial, well, certainly that's one of the passages that comes to mind. And so I'm not going to repeat what Ray talked about because he did an excellent job of talking about what it means to consider others as more important than yourself. And that's certainly an aspect of this self-denial. There's another angle that I'm not going to spend a lot of time on, and it's in Romans 12, verse 3, very similar to the one in Philippians 2, where we're told that we are not to think of ourselves more highly than we ought, but to think soberly or soundly, according as God hath dealt or distributed to every man the measure of faith. So what is this telling us? It's in the context of God, of the Holy Spirit giving spiritual gifts to believers. And in essence, he's saying, don't get caught up with who you are or because you have this gift or that gift, but at the same time, think soberly. Think soundly. If you have a gift, you ought to be using it because God gave it to you and he knew what he was doing. And so it's not a pity party. It's not this self-deprecating idea of, well, oh, you know, I can't do anything. You know, I just need to not accept any responsibility or not do anything. That is not at all it. In fact, if we model Christ, we have to think that he was self-denying, right? But what did he do when it came to talking about himself? He was very clear. He was very honest with who he was. He didn't take the approach, oh no, I'm not somebody you should listen to. He was just simply, this is who I am. But he never, never acted in a self-centered or selfish way. So as we think of this denial concept, I think what we see there in Romans is that we are to recognize what we are in Christ. We're to recognize the gifts that he's given us. And we're not to engage in a pity party or in a self-deprecating exercise which disables us for God's use. So what might be involved in this concept of self-denial? Well, let's go back to Peter. You know Peter's denial. People were pointing at him. You're one of his disciples. And what did he do? He didn't say, well, you know, I mean, I know who he is, but no, I'm not a disciple. He didn't say, you know, I've heard him speak, but, you know, nah, I'm not in full agreement with him. He denied him 3 times. He said, I do not know this man. I have nothing to do with him. So what is he doing? He is leaving no doubt in anybody's mind that he doesn't want to be associated with this man called Christ. That's the force of this word, denial. And we're told that we are to deny ourselves. Peter didn't leave any doubt of what he was trying to say. We read about denial in Titus chapter 2, verse 12. And starting at verse 11, these are familiar verses. It says, for the grace of God that bringeth salvation hath appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world. So we are to turn our backs on ungodliness. We are to turn our backs on worldly lust, just as Peter turned his back on the Lord. we should leave no doubt. That was Peter's intent, right? And that's the same word, the same power of the concept that Christ is saying when he says, you need to deny yourself. But as if that description isn't enough, he adds what I think is a word picture that I think helps us define what he meant. He said, if anybody wants to be my disciple, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily. Now, we're familiar with this word picture. We know about the cross. We know about crucifixion. We know how Christ had to carry his cross. And the one who was bearing his cross was on his way to die. There was no way out. He was on his way to die. He didn't pick it up voluntarily. He was forced to do it. It was imposed on you. Now, think of this. One carrying their cross had no earthly future. Correct? And one carrying his cross had probably no concern about tomorrow. Wouldn't you say? Now, where the picture breaks down a little bit, they probably didn't have a whole lot of concern about other people either at that moment. Okay? But as we think about this picture, life according to their choices and their desires was a thing of the past. Was it not? And Christ says to be his follower, his disciple, was to pick up your cross and carry it. Now, for the immediate disciples, that had obvious meaning. They just heard that John the Baptist had been beheaded. And he told them later that they would experience a similar fate. You remember when the mother of James and John came and said, hey, could my sons have a real nice place in your kingdom? And he said, can they drink the cup I'm going to drink? Can they be baptized with the baptism that I'm going to experience? And they said, yes, we can. And what did he say? You surely will. You surely will. You see, that was going to be their destiny. Not necessarily crucifixion, but martyrdom. So these words had specific implication for those that were actually following him and for those who were rallying around thinking, yeah, let's join this party. You know, this is going to be great. He was making it clear, you need to count the cost. And I'm going to make it clear what the costs are. So how does it relate to us? Well, I think there are several passages in the New Testament that help us see that. Galatians 2:20, Paul says, I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And the life I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. So the life that we are to live is not a life focused on what we want, but a life focused on what he wants. That's what our life should be. That's what should be wherever we are. And we talked about, you know, we're all called to different callings. The fellow that founded C12, he always has some neat stories, and he was telling a story. He used to live in Chicago, and there was a fellow who was a special needs fella, and Buck is not a warm, fuzzy guy. Not at all. I mean, you take me and ramp it up a notch, and you got Buck. But he's also 70-some years old, and he's mellowed a lot. But he tells a story how he got connected with this guy, and he just couldn't shake the connection. And And so he would kind of begrudgingly go and do things for this fella. And then one moment something happened and he realized, I need to go. And he thought to himself, that's kind of different. That's not the old buck. And somebody said, no, that's Jesus in his buck suit. And so, you know, are we being Jesus in our Tom suit, in our Steve suit, in our Kim suit? That's what we're getting at here. This concept of dying, of denying ourselves, of picking up our cross and following Him. Paul stated it so well there in Galatians 2. Colossians 3, we see it again. We referred to this last time. Verses 1 and 2. We're to set our affections on things in heaven, not on things on the earth. It doesn't mean that we can't enjoy things down here. But our hearts need to be set and focused on that which is for Christ's purpose, on that which is eternal. Notice what Paul says later on in that same chapter, down in verse 5. He says, mortify or put to death. Same thought process, isn't it? Mortify, therefore, your members which are upon the earth. Now, I'm going to read this in the ESV because it, to me, makes it a lot easier to understand. Put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you. Sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. And he continues in verse 8, but now you must put them all away, anger, wrath, malice, slander, and obscene talk from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, seeing you have put off the old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge after the image of its creator. So we see a twofold aspect to this concept of both self-denial and taking up our cross. Part of it is recognizing those things that are not pleasing to God and put them away. Don't let them be part of our life. Put them away. And then turn to those things that are pleasing to Him and be occupied and engaged with those things. And I guarantee you, if we put those away, it's a whole lot easier to turn to and be engaged in those things that are pleasing to Him. So that's the dynamic that I think we see here, and I think it's absolutely parallel to this thought of taking up our cross and following Him, of denying ourselves. Again, I think we see an example here in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh. He put it to death. He said, that is not who I am. Choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. He put one thing away to turn to something else. But when Christ said this, and thankfully there in Luke, it added this one word. It said, take up your cross daily. Daily. Now, that could not have been a literal statement. Nobody went through that more than once. When they took up their cross, they were done. They didn't come back and do it again, do it again, do it again. So we know that to some degree there, the concept he's trying to convey is a figurative concept. Take up your cross daily. He didn't say weekly. He didn't say monthly. He didn't say it's a one-time deal for the believer. He said to do it daily. Now for me, when I think of self-denial, frankly, I don't like to think about it. When I think about for the rest of my life, that's pretty intimidating. When I think about doing it today, that's a little more manageable. That's a little bit more something I can say, okay, with the Lord's help, I'm going to pursue that today. And then we'll start over again tomorrow. So I think the fact that he put that in there is pretty important to us. I think it tells us something of how we do this. It's something that we have to do on a daily basis. So if we're not spending time with him on a daily basis, how in the world are we going to do that? Let me ask you this, and be honest with me. Do you find denying yourself easy? If you do, raise your hand. It's not easy. It may be the hardest thing that we can do to live that way. So if we're not spending time with him daily, we don't have a chance. We just frankly don't have a chance. So I think that is so important. So as we think about this and as we consider this instruction to deny ourselves, to take up our cross daily, well, what do we conclude? Well, I conclude, one, it's really hard. And two, I just don't like it at all. I don't like teaching it. I don't like hearing it. I don't like thinking about it. It goes against everything within my fiber. The third thing, I am not good at it. So don't think that you can get clues from me as to how to make this work. Perhaps it comes down to this. In Luke 9:24, we find these words. Whosoever will save his life shall lose it. Whosoever will lose his life for my sake, the same shall find it. Now, it seems like Jesus is saying that if we want to experience life in its fullest, life as it's meant to be, how many of you want that? We do, don't we? We want a full life. And I think what he's saying is if you want that, you can have it. It's not under door number two or door number three, but you can have it. You simply give up your life. I say simply. That's what it's saying. And doesn't it come down to faith? You see, that makes no sense to me. It doesn't compute within my brain. And the only way I'm going to be able to make progress is to recognize that by faith, this is a principle. Just like you will reap what you sow. This is a fundamental spiritual truth that largely doesn't make sense to us. But the only way we're going to begin to move in that direction is to simply exercise faith. Simply. So what do we do with this? I think we can sense that it's definitely relevant to us. And it's definitely something that we need to spend some time individually contemplating. What does it look like? What does it look like tomorrow? When I get up and I go about my work and I engage with people and I engage with my family, what does it look like? Because I'm not good at it. So maybe some of you who are can share with me some insight and some secret But I think that's what the Lord wants us to do.